to you and a warm welcome to Behind the News. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, 2012 election petition judgment by the Supreme Court, 1 year on tomorrow. What are the lessons learned and what is in there for election administration? Guta absent from today's cleanup exercise in some markets of Accra. Why did the members refuse to participate in the exercise? And the development of the Wa airstrip, which has been on the drawing board for some time now. What are the government's plans for it? Stay tuned for the next 1 hour. We bring you details of all these on our program tonight. You can. News is also live on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Sunrise FM 106.7 in Cofodia, Radio BAR 93.5 in Sunyani, Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wavolta, Star Radio 91.1 and 91.3 in Hoa Nobunu FM 96.5 in Tema. Behind the News is also live on Garden City Radio 92.1 in Kumasi and Ura Radio 89.7 in Bogatanga. Tomorrow marks 1 year since the highest court of the land, the Supreme Court, settled the raging debate in the country as to who has actually been endorsed by Ghanaians to occupy the Flagstaff House. After all the shenanigans in the courtroom, NDC officials and members went home smiling as the 9-member court led by Justice William Atuguba declared their candidate, President John Dramani Mahama, and President John Dramani Mahama, the legitimately elected leader of the country. The days preceding the declaration witnessed some frenzy moments as residents, particularly in Accra, barricaded themselves in their rooms, fearing the worst. But all passed peacefully as NPP candidate Nana Akufo-Addo honorably accepted the august judge's verdict. So on Behind the News tonight, we are speaking to some of the key figures whose comments and actions captured some of the media headlines at the time. And let's go to the phone lines and speak with lawyer Abraham Amaleba. Good evening, lawyer, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, and good evening to your
ladies. Well, Mr. Amaleba, you were one of the key observers and commentators of the election petition case before the Supreme Court. Well, it's unfortunate we've lost Abraham Amaleba there on the line. We will quickly get in touch with him and proceed with our conversation. Behind the News is also live on GBC Karachi FM 95.5 in Kete Karachi, Unique FM 95.7 in Accra, Radio Savannah 91.2 and Tamale Garden City Radio 92.1. in Kumasi, you understand. Abraham Amaleba is back on the line. Lawyer, welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, you were one of the key observers and commentators of the election petition case before the Supreme Court. What, in your opinion, has changed so far as far as the verdict is concerned?
It is important to state that the election petition brought to the fore some of the issues that...
Well, your line is a bit unclear. If you could reposition yourself well.
Yes. Can you hear me now? Is it better now?
Yes, I can. Please go ahead.
Okay. I'm saying that the election petition that was brought before the Supreme Court by the three Ghanaians, Nana Akufo-Addo, Jacob Ekuei-Villamse, and Mahmoud Bawumia, tested our democratic credentials as a nation. It also sought to test the judicial process. And so at the end of the day, one would say that as a people, we were able to come out of the election process, the petition, as a united people. Don't forget that it is this same election that occurs in other countries and they end up in a war situation. But in our case, we ended up at the Supreme Court as a people. So the election petition has, as a matter of fact, resulted in Ghana being seen as a true democracy. And it has placed Ghana on the map of the Committee of Nations as a truly democratic nation.
So you're obviously saying there were no losers or winners in the verdict delivered by the Supreme Court, but Ghana ultimately became the winner.
If you narrow it down to the verdict itself, in terms of the 5-4, 6-4, and the way the justices voted, then you will say that, yes, there was a winner, the best of the NCP and the president. But if you look at the totality of that exercise in the Supreme Court, then you will say that Ghana is the winner and that we're able to sell ourselves as a people to the entire world that, unlike other countries who resort to cutlasses and resort to guns, we resorted to the use of the judicial process. And for this reason, we are united as a country, and we are moving on without any hindrance.
Well, so what do you think will change in the next elections following last year's decision by the 9-member justices?
You would want to look at the various players in the election position. You want to look at the EC, what lesson the EC can draw from this. You want to look at the political party. And you even want to look at you, the journalist. I'm afraid to say that for you, the journalist, you've not learned any lesson at all. Because just today, a journalist was dragged to the commission that's coming to the Black Star World Cup debacle.
So you are talking about the contempt of court.
Exactly. It is a situation which is hard in the sense that this is a commission that decided to even go around to educate people on contempt matters before it starts. And yet, you had a journalist who was dragged in there. So it appears your colleagues have not learned anything from it. Now, with the Electoral Commission, they would have to conduct another election for us to know whether they've learned lessons or not. Because there are some recommendations by the Supreme Court for them to do an overhaul of the electoral process. For the political parties, they haven't been the main actors in this game, would want to ensure that they are vigilant in the next election. So it depends on whom you are looking at. It depends on whether you are looking at the journalists, you are looking at the political parties, or you are looking at the EC itself. But each of these groups would have some lessons to learn from the election.
But do you see a situation where someone is going to court again because we did not learn from history?
No, going to court is not bad. In fact, that is the most civilized way to go. And I would ask anybody to go back to court again. Between going back to court and taking cutlasses, on every day, I recommend going back to court. So going back to court should not be as if we've not learned lessons. That is the most civilized way to resolve issues. So that shouldn't come into the picture at all. If you go back to court, it doesn't mean that you've not learned lessons. It only means that you agree to use the legal process to resolve disputes. And that is what every civilized society will do. But we wouldn't have learned lessons. One will repeat the bad thing. And one bad thing is what I've just alluded to in terms of that generally. Another bad thing, if we happen to face it, is if we find a situation where the EC does not recruit qualified people to man the electoral process. Where we had a situation in the 2010 election, somebody wanted to write 550 and wrote 550 and zero. So if we do not get the right people as recommended by the Supreme Court, then I would say that the EC has not learned lessons. But going back to court is the most civilized, and that shouldn't be, we have not learned lessons. We should always go back to the court. And I'll ask any Ghanaian who is pissed at any election result to continue to go back to court. That doesn't mean that you will not learn lessons.
We want to thank you very much for your time with us tonight. And Ibrahim Amaliba is a lawyer. And Ben Nelson was also a keen observer of the back and forth at the Supreme Court, and he's joining us on the line. Ms. Nelson, good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening, Agatha, and good evening to your listeners.
Well, it's suddenly 1 year after we heard those words from Justice Atuguba declaring President Mahama legitimately elected. What do you make of that day a year on?
Well, I think that for some of us, it was a vindication of the stand we had always taken for some years now. The elections are won and lost at the polling station. Two, our political parties have been very lazy. If you are in power and you are in opposition and want to get to power, you must be able to work your socks off and select persons who can read and write. For the commission, their staff is less than 3,000 in the whole country. And every election, they select and train 110,000. So it is up to you to select somebody who can read and write. Otherwise, like Alababa said, in one case, an electoral presiding officer who was not well lettered wrote 270 as 270. And the polling agent signed. If the polling agents were educated, they would have signed, this would have passed. Or in one of the police stations in Accra, because you had the presiding officer and the polling agent signing the thing sheet at 9 a.m., like signing a blank check. So I'm happy that people have realized you win or lose race at polling station. Also, there is the need for persons to be alert and the political parties to be more diligent. And I'm sure once this is done, I'll be surprised if anybody will go to court, given the reason that the loopholes that the courts identified that we all saw will not be repeated.
Well, and again, how will the decision impact on the upcoming district assembly elections?
Well, I think that the district level elections, one regret, however, was the decision of the court not to allow the electoral commission to disprove the MPP's allegation that certain people voted without biometric checks. Because if one of the planks of the MPP's argument was that people voted without a biometric check, and the electoral commission was ready to show that everybody voted with biometric, the denial, the objection by the NPP legal team, and the court agreed, that was perhaps my only regret, because we would have then seen the power and strength of the biometric system. So that, I think, that was a lesson that I'm sure in future people will take to it.
All right, Ms. Elson, we want to thank you very much for your time with us.
Thank you very much.
Ben Elson is with the Daily Dispatch. And also joining us on the line is lawyer Ayikwe Otu, his former Attorney General and Minister of Justice. Good evening, sir, and welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Well, lawyer, we remember you very well. I should say Ghanaians will remember you for your rescue mission of Hopes and Adoyens John before the 9 eminent judges. If you cast your mind back, how would you describe the tension or mood in the courtroom on that day?
Well, I believe that almost everybody who had come there were of the opinion that nothing could save the two of them, and that they were honest as far as the prison was concerned. So it was quite a rather unsettling situation, because it's rather, again, a slippery path. Nobody can be sure of how the judges will rule, and we are not talking about one judge. We are talking about 9 justices of the Supreme Court. You know, and if you follow the proceedings, you'll find that even on small issues of application, there were sometimes dissenting opinions expressed by some of the judges. So how could one be sure that they will all come to a unanimous decision that they may not sentence the cases before them? It was quite intense, but with several years of experience, I think that we took it in our stride.
But do you recollect all the tensions, especially that characterized the day preceding the delivery of the verdict?
Of course, I mean, as I have said previously, It was quite an unsettling position. Nobody was sure as to whatever would happen, you know. And if you saw the way the president, who the other justices are allowed to be their spokesperson, you know, was going, you know, and the passion with which he spoke, you know, and reacted to some of the submissions, it wasn't easy. Easy to predict the outcome. Even after the time they rose to go and write, you know, or consider the verdict, it was so full of tension.
So what have we learned from this verdict as Ghanaians? Then somebody says that Bishi is still around because some journalists are running their mouth on the Football Investigation Commission. It looks like we have not learned any lessons.
Well, you see, you have a task as journalists to try and marry the constitutional provisions that deal with, you know, the freedom of the press with the contempt proceedings. Until, you know, we amended the provisions granting full authority to the Supreme Court or to justices of the Superior Court to punish, you know, for contempt, one should be very careful, you know, how to comment, especially on the matters pending before the court, especially the Superior Court. It does not mean that if you go and do that for an inferior court, you could not be punished. Because while the inferior courts may not have the power to punish, they can always refer those matters to the Superior Court to punish. So that is where you have a difficulty. Some think that they have a right to, you know, just express their opinion. In other words, that they could not be gagged in any way whatsoever. You know, and they have a free and, you know, but if you read the provisions well, you find that editorial opinions of editors cannot, interpreted to mean opinions of others in respect of pending actions. You are not to be gagged in respect of editorial opinions. Nobody should write editorials for you. Does it mean that gives you a right to go about, you know, commenting on pending cases to the extent that you bring the, you know, the entire system into disrepute?
And in the case of the Electoral Commission, what would you say has been the impact of this judgment on its work?
Well, they, I believe they held a few workshops in trying to look at the way forward and some of the issues raised by the Supreme Court justices. To me, one of the most important things that we had recommended when the Committee of Attorney Generals was set up to review the Supreme Court decision was that we said that the IPAC ought to be strengthened and that it was no use for the, you know, party representatives to meet at IPAC, take decisions, and then at the end of the day, the commission says that it is not law and it's not binding. Because if you look at the constitutional provisions, what is binding on the EC is the CI and the various electoral laws and not decisions arrived at an IPAC. It seems to us that if we decide that all IPAC decisions before any major, you know, election could be brought together into a constitutional instrument, you know, so that they become binding, then it will go a long way in resolving some of the issues. But you go and meet and talk, and becomes only a talk show in the sense that at the end of the day, the EC says, these are not binding on me. What is binding on me is the provisions of the constitutional instruments with which I work or the other, you know, laws. For example, when people drew the EC's attention to the fact that using the National Health Insurance ID cards for purposes of registration for voting was not the best, he refused, saying that the law has already been passed and that in the CI it is one of the, you know, modes of identification. So that is the point I'm making. Assuming that IPAC people have met and drawn his attention to it, he says, I've accepted it. Have you accepted it? How does he implement it?
Well,
you understand? But if he says, well, I'm okay by what you have said, but the law says that these can be used, then it defeats the entire purpose. So IPAC work should be taken more seriously. And we must see to it that it is implemented and incorporated into the constitutional instruments that the EC works with, such that when these decisions are seen, when problems are seen, when issues are raised by the political parties, they can become a way of resolving some of the electoral issues that we have in this country.
All right, lawyer, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Lawyer Ayikwe Otu is former Attorney General and Minister of Justice. Now let's listen to the voice of Justice Atikuba.
The unanimous law reflects the claims relating to duplicate senior members, duplicate polling station courts, and unknown polling stations for short. Atikuba Adeyira Bakubami Bebebe and Akotobanku JJC dismiss the claim of overvoting. Atikuba Adeyira Bakubami Bebebe and Akotobanku JJC dismiss the claim relating to absence of signature of a bad offer. Atikuba Adeyira Deche Bakubami Bebebe and Akotobanku dismiss the claim relating to voting without biometric verification. And sir, for which you and the new Edward JJRC grant all the three claims, that is, overvoting, absence of required offer signature, and voting without biometric verification, and all the votes involved and order of rerun of the affected areas. The JJRC grants the claim of overvoting, but has provided a roadmap in his judgment as to the figures of votes to be ascertained and cancelled, and a rerun of the areas affected. The JJRC upholds the claim related to absence of required offer signatures on the pages, cancels the results concerned, and orders a rerun of the areas affected. Bakubami JRC grants the claim of voting without biometric verification, cancels the votes revoked, and orders a rerun of the areas affected. In the second circumstances, the overall effect is that the first respondent was validly elected and the petition is therefore dismissed. our borrowed judgment for the sake of convenience are handed over to the register of this court.
Well, that was Justice William Atiguba delivering the verdict on the 2012 election petition case last year. Now, joining us on the line is an expert in political marketing and a lecturer at the University of Ghana Business School, Dr. Kobbie Mensah. Good evening, Doc. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you for having me. Good evening to your listeners as well.
Doc, will we have a different election in 2016 as opposed to what happened in 2012 as a result of the Supreme Court verdict, which is 1 year tomorrow?
Well, I'm thinking that in 2016, we're going to have a very good election, devoid of any acrimonies, devoid of any court proceedings. In my view, although the court proceedings was very good because it prevented people from taking to the street, but I think it's cost the country so much. If you look at the economic situation that we have now, yes, you can attribute part of it to the process, I mean, the costly process that we went through, both emotionally and physically. And I think it actually took the administration off course, and it took the opposition off course. So in my view, it would be good for us to put the necessary procedures and necessary mechanisms in place to have a very clean and a very acceptable 2016 election so that it can actually prevent us, or it can actually, you know, prevent we having a dire economic situation as we have now.
But Doc, how can we make our elections as clean as what pertains in the Western world? I'm sure even in the West is not as clean as we see, but far better than elections on the continent of Africa.
I agree. But like Ben Elson articulated, if, for example, parties would do due diligence to make sure that they employ people who can read and write, people who are very diligent in their work, people who are not lazy, people who are actually up to the task, and have the interest of parties at heart. Now, we can avoid some of the basic mistakes that actually occurred in the 2012 election, and also, you know, make us, you know, avoid the costly court proceedings that we had. Yeah, so I understand that we cannot have as clean as Britain or US have in terms of electoral processes. We can as well avoid the basic mistakes that happened and actually cost us, you know, so much.
So with the Electoral Commission, what do you think the EC will take on board from the judges' decision for the 2016 elections?
I think the judges were very clear in prescribing what the EC must do to ensure that we have a very clean 2016. And I have no doubt that the EC will do a good job of making sure that those recommendations are actually worked out. I was, however, disappointed when the party had to wait until latter days before they were calling for the EC to make sure that they implement, you know, the measures. I was of the view that immediately after they proceeded, you know, the parties were going to be on the EC to make sure that those measures or those recommendations had been rectified. But down the line, almost a year after, before we had the parties calling the EC to do what had been actually told, and I think that it was, again, one of the lapses in our party politics. You know, after something happened and then people draw, we go to sleep. We don't follow up. And that is one of our lapses, I mean, one of our limitations. So I'm hoping that the EC would diligently resolve or diligently actually follow what the judges actually prescribed and then make sure that the right thing is done for 2016.
Well, Doc, we want to thank you very much for your time with us tonight. Dr. Kobbie Mensah is an expert in political marketing and a lecturer at the University of Ghana Business School. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana, Accra. Now at some of your text messages, and now Pompey Price in Insomnia says, the kind of exercise should not be a 9-day wonder. Ghanaians should change their attitude and be self-disciplined. And Incho Emmanuel Kologu says, the verdict of the Supreme Court has actually deepened Ghana's democracy. Let's thank Nanado and the NPP. And that day was a victory for the NDC and the nation. And so Mr. President should focus on the good work he is doing. That's what Monica Coons in Navrungo. Now to our next story. And Dakar has been in total darkness since morning. The cause of the blackout is yet to be known. Residents are asking the ECG to tell them what the actual problem is and whether the power will come back anytime soon. So we have on the line Eric Asante, Public Relations Officer of the ECG, Accra West, to tell us the actual cause of the total darkness in the capital. Eric, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Agata.
So what really is the problem, if you can tell us?
Oh, yes. As we latter part of this year, in the initial part indicated, we were experiencing a shortfall in generation, and that has accounted for this outages we experience nowadays. The situation got improved, or was improved sometime. We realized that there was a minimal amount of load shedding that was ongoing. But as we speak today, we have had to shed almost around 290 megawatts, which is quite a large amount of energy that is being taken off. So this accounts for this total darkness in some parts of Accra.
So it's not the whole of Accra, but some parts of Accra.
Yeah, it is not the whole of Accra. We have certain parts in the eastern part of Accra, some also in the western part of Accra. People within Russia, Martichu, Reg Emmanuel Estates, Madabraka, Dansoma, part of Dansoman. We have quite a number of people going off both within the western and the eastern part. Alajo, we have an Gisal area, Tabora, Abeka, and those areas. And
Medina, Adenta.
Yes, we have Russia, Tabora, Teshi, parts of Dansoman, Alajo, Achimota, Fadama, Abeka, Tabora, Martichu, Reg Emmanuel Estates, parts of Adabraka, Oyarifa, and we have also Achimota. These are some of the areas that have gone off.
Eric, we are not likely to get power back anytime soon.
We will restore power when we get off the peak period. And this problems occur when we are within the peak period where demand goes very high. So after 10, when the demand drops, we are...
You mean after 10 p.m.?
Yes, most likely after 10 p.m. It improves. We cannot pick all people who are off or all customers who are currently off just after 10, but gradually we start picking when the demand drops after 10. And by 11:30, 12, within that period, almost all our customers should be back on supply. Because within that time, we don't have much demand on the network.
So, Eric, are you going to do this every day?
It's a yes and a no answer. What I'm saying yes because so far as generation has not improved and there's a shortfall and we are asked by our transmitter, those who transmit the power to us, to shed load. We find ourselves in a very difficult situation to, as it were, say that we are not going to drop the amount of megawatts they ask us to do. If we don't do that, then it means that we are going to cause a total collapse of the system. So as and when generation improves, the situation will get out of it. But other than when they ask us to drop some load because of a shortfall in generation, definitely we don't have any alternative.
It's likely to be off tomorrow so that we will be prepared.
As we put out there, earlier on. We asked, once the load shedding, we have not announced that the load shedding is off or is ended. We are going according to our plan. Maybe we have to remind our customers that we have not said anywhere that we have ended the load shedding. But as and when the situation improves, definitely we become a little bit, the effect becomes a little bit minimal. We don't shed a larger amount of megawatts. But when the shortfall is severe on us, then definitely we have to take a chunk of our customers and shed load on them.
But basically, you say the remote causes shortfall in generation. Is that a problem within me of the plants?
No. We already informed our customers about, when there's a problem with any of the generation mix, when there's a problem with hydro, where we are having a shortfall in water supply, where the water level, which also augments our thermal plants, and definitely it will have effects on demand, when demand also rises during the peak. During the day, there's not much problem being encountered. But during the night, where after 6, where people come to the house and put on their gadgets and the load start picking up, that is where the problem is. So it's a generation problem with water levels, with also some transmission problems and the thermal problems that we are having at Abuazi and other things, that our generators would be in the position to seriously tell us about. But as distributors, that is what we are informed of. When there's a shortfall in generation, that is what accounts for some of these things.
Eric, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Eric
Asante
is Public Relations Officer of the ECD Accra West. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. Some of your text messages, and AU Farouk in Tamale says, in fact, I will only remember the Supreme Court of Justice William Atukba announcing President Mahama as a legitimate winner of the 2012 election. And this one from JK Owoman Pashanti, the Supreme Court verdict 1 year ago should be put to rest and let's focus on the development of the nation. Many thanks for your text messages. And let's to our next story. In response to the poor sanitation and the increasing cholera cases in Accra, the AMA today mobilized traders within Tudu, Okaishi, Makola and Agbogbloshie markets in a cleanup campaign to rid the city of filth. Even though the exercise was reported to be well patronized, members of the Ghana Union Traders Association refused to participate in the exercise. According to the association, the organizers of the cleanup exercise and the AMA did not inform members of the exercise. The association also argues that the business operating permit members have been paying annually should be used to cater for sanitation in the market. George Ofori is the president of Guta, and we will be speaking with him shortly. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. And George Ofori has just joined the discussions. Good evening, Ofori, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, my dear.
Well, I'm very well. You are saying that the organizers of the cleanup exercise did not inform you, hence your refusal to participate in it. But is it a good justification, since the exercise was for a good cause?
Thank you very much, and good evening to our listeners. Guta, and for that matter, myself, and us saying it's not a good cause, but after all, cleanliness is next to godliness. But the issue was that I particularly was informed by another radio station around 8:39 yesterday night that there was going to be an exercise Madam, just ask yourself if such an invitation could be extended to you at that time of the day. We need to be able to be prepared to attend to such an exercise. No. So, consultations were not done. If they thought that Gutta was a stakeholder, and for that matter, respect could have been accorded us, they should have invited us. You don't just write a letter, or you just don't do anything. You don't even inform us, and you tell us that we should come and engage in such an exercise today. So Gutta as a corporate body was not invited. They sent, I have information that there were mobile vans going around. And so if their attention was that they were talking to individual members to participate in that exercise, then so be it. But Gutta as a corporate was not invited.
Officially, you were not invited.
Officially, you were not invited.
So should the AMA and the organizers invite you to the exercise the next time? Are you prepared to participate in that?
Madam, thank you very much. We will sit down with them. It's not a question of participation, but we will sit down with them and let them know that the business operating permits that have been sanctioned by the Ministry of Local Government Act 462, which mandates every metropolitan, municipal, district assembly to, of course, charge some fees in terms of their jurisdiction. You know, public officials, civil servants and politicians must be brought to book. They have to be accountable to the people of Ghana. I mean, we are paying business operating permits to you. What does that business operating permit translate? It translates into development and, of course, failed training like what was done today. The AMA, the other municipal, metropolitan municipal and district assemblies doing that. And so, if they are collecting the business operating permit from traders or the business community and they are not performing, do we sit down and fold our arms and be asking that, it's a patriotic sort of thing, so we should all engage in? Meanwhile, patriotism, you have taken your money. What are those monies being used for? They should be accountable for all these things.
Seriously,
they engaged the services of contractors like Jim Lyon, Astadu, all other contractors that they didn't fit contracting them. What has happened between the two of them to the extent that they should turn around and ask traders? All of a sudden, they close down their shops. And even if they are going to close down their shop, let Thursday, one or Saturday, as being weekend. So we fund the exercise not to the extent that we are not being patriotic, but we must call a spade a spade that the fees, the levies, the rates that they are collecting from us, property rates, the business operating license, and whatever. We must also ask them what those monies are being used.
All right, then hold on a minute for me. Let me go to the other line. The head of waste management of the AMA, Samuel Pudu, has joined the discussion. So, good evening, Mr. Pudu. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening.
You heard Mr. Ofori on the other line, and he says that business operating permits that you collect from these traders, what do you use the money for?
I think the type of money is collected is well spelled out. It's business operating license. They're not for waste management. They have various revenues that are paid, for various services that are performed in the metropolis. You say so. The DPRG is paying a different fee, and the business people are also paying fees. So it's business operating license. And whatever is paid for is used to to do a digital development. AMA is not only waste. We help in schools, we construct schools, we cleaning the city, we have a whole lot of responsibilities. You see, so if you're paying a business operating license, then it is the space that you're operating your business, and for that matter, the sweeping of the frontage of your, you know, of your shop and the distorting of drains in front of your services, especially if your shop happens to be on a ceremonial street that you have identified. You find the Zoom Lion, you know, GPS, you find the AMA GPS working. You see, so it is not only for, you know, that if you pay a business operating license, that means it covers all services that are supposed, you know, operated in the metropolis. So it's part of.
Well, and again, Gutta claims you did not inform its members on the cleanup exercise officially. How true is that?
Yeah, I think Gutta has always been informed about, you know, organizing city-wide, you know, cleanup exercises. But for this particular case, we targeted market, you know, where we think that, you know, where food is being sold and water is being sold. And for that matter, the target was market women. And for that matter, we made contact with the Greater Accra Market Women Association president. And for that matter, he also informed various markets in Accra. And they need to do this cleanup even on a working day. You see, so if you should go citywide, then it's like a whole lot of activities will be disrupted. So we only went to the market to ensure that the market is, the internal part of the market is also free, because we have earlier on cleared all the heaps in the market from Lorry Park. So why not go inside there now and remove all the first out and to ensure that we control the cholera outbreak in the city?
Well, briefly hold on. Let me take a response from Mr. Ofori. Mr. Ofori, can you hear me? Well, it seems Mr. Ofori has dropped, his line has dropped. But coming back to you, Mr. Akudu, so how would you describe today's cleanup exercise, and would it be regular?
Yes, looking at the targets we actually used, yeah, I think it was a successful cleanup. A lot of filth was brought out, especially from the external part of the market. It was tremendous, you know, exercise that we did today. The market women, some of them were selling all right, but then they managed to engage, you know, some people to sell the drinks, sweep the market, draw the first out, and we collected it. And this is going to be regular, because we have also formed this sanitation standards, you know, improvement implementation committee. And that is the committee that will be serving as a pressure group at the grassroots to ensure regular cleaning of, you know, the metropolis, especially the communities, and then the markets, and then other areas that we want to target, because we have found it difficult to go citywide. We've gone citywide several times, but this time we want to do it group by group. And the market was where we have to start from today, because we had earlier, since 4th of August, started cleaning, you know, since the vice president, you know, took it upon himself to actually come and see the problem, because of getting into disaster, for that matter. We have been cleaning, and this exercise is one of those strategies we have put in place to control the outbreak of cholera in the metropolis.
All right. Mr. Kudu, we want to thank you very much for your time with us tonight. Samuel Kudu is Head of Waste Management, AMA. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Volta Star Radio 91.1 and 91.3 in Ho. The Upper West Regional Minister, Alhaji Hamidu Amin Suleimani, says one of his focus is to get an improved air transport system in the region. He's therefore collaborating with the relevant agencies to accelerate infrastructural development that will enhance movement to and from the region. Alhaji Suleimani yesterday had a meeting with the Minister of Transport, Diffa Ativo, in Wa. Alhaji Suleimani has joined me on the phone to tell us more about how to improve the air transport system and why is it critical for the development of Upper West. Good evening, Senya. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, man. Good evening to your sharing business behind the news.
Well, Alhaji, how would you describe the air transport system of the region in relation to the Wa airstrip?
Well, thank you very much. You know, the Wa airstrip, where we surfaced, it was an air surface, and then 1997, we got it resealed. We got it sealed, so we have a very good runway. But unfortunately, the civil aviation and airport company, they think that there are certain structures which do not give safety for aircraft commercial flights in the area. So that is what the Minister for Transport and her team came to discuss with us, possibility of having some of those things removed to pave way for commercial flights to fly into the region.
Well, one issue which came up was the issue of encroachment. Is this still a problem in the attempt to upgrade or relocate the airstrip?
It's a major, major problem of encroachment. When the airstrip was reconstructed, 11 states or resealed in 1997, I mean, we fenced around the perimeter, but so many people have now encroached around the whole place, which is, I mean, a major security risk to navigation. So that is one of the issues that we're confronting. But incidentally, most of them are there without permits. They are all there, you know, in planning the assembly that has to give you permit to put up structures. But most people there have just gone to put up structures without any permit. So they're all illegal structures.
Well, and during your meeting with the transport minister, what exactly was your request to the ministry regarding the airstrip?
Well, the ministry is prepared. I mean, the agencies under the ministry, civil aviation, airport company, they're all prepared. If we can't make some safety arrangements, that is by getting some of the structures that pose danger to navigation out of the way of the where they are now, they will give the green light to commercial flights to come into Wa. Of course, the air travel has become very, very key now in Ghana, and particularly the domestic flights have become very crucial for movement of people across the country. You go to Tamale, there are so many flights that come there, Takoradi, Kumasi, Suyani, and it makes things very easy. Those of us here, it takes us about 12 hours traveling recklessly. That's a reckless driver. Travel to Accra, it will take you 12 hours, and that's suddenly a whole day waste. But in if we were to have an air service, we just do it in an hour or just or so. And that will ease everybody's movement when you want to get down to the capital or to other parts of the country. So we are very much, we are very keen, and we'll try to partner with the Ministry of Transport and these agencies to see how we can make the place available for commercial flights.
Well, briefly again on the encroachments, are you clearing all the people there? What exactly are you going to do?
Indeed, before I came here, earlier attempts had been made by the Municipal Assembly to dislodge some of those on the encroachment, but I think there's a court injunction that is holding on with the exercise. I mean, it's clear that if you are not supposed to be in the place, then you are there. The best thing is to get out of the place. It's in the interest of the people there to move out, because in the event that there's a disaster, it's going to engulf many people. So I think that illegality should not be condoned, and that's one of our major, major problems in this country. We seem to condone illegality, and people just get on doing wrong things all the time, because after all, you can just do it, but they'll come and say it's okay, leave it there. And I think that is not good enough. I had occasion to have a meeting with where my municipal and district assemblies, the DCs are there. And I talked a lot about the assembly's role. Assembly is the main organ for Asara planning is concerned, and they should determine the land use in their area in collaboration with our chiefs. Yes, people may have their lands, but what you put there must be determined by the assembly, and that should be a very key aspect of the role of the assembly. Otherwise, we're going to have hazard development, and nothing will work.
All right. Alhaji, we want to thank you very much for your time with us tonight. Alhaji Amidu Amin Suleimani, the Upper West Regional Minister, and we are going back to the story on sanitation, and let's talk to the Executive Secretary of the Coalition of NGOs in Water and Sanitation, Koniwas Ben Asa. Good evening, Ben. Welcome to the program. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra, and Behind the News is also live on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Sunrise FM 106.7 in Kofodia. William Atiguban, the verdict of the election petition, a year tomorrow, and this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. Isaac Yahweh, do control the sounds, and my producers were Edmund Pete Baitagama and Christopher Esidu. My name is Agatha Samoa, and you have a lovely night.